Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, today marks 35 years since the world's worst nuclear disaster, Chernobyl. Chernobyl Children International, CCI, are the sole organisation working in the Chernobyl area to be accredited with United Nations official NGO status, and founder and CEO of CCI, Eddie Roach, joins me now. How are you doing, Eddie?
Good afternoon, Ray.
I was getting my stuff together there. That's why I stumbled over that word. The front page of the Irish Independent from this day, 35 years ago. They've reprinted it there on their independent.ie.
Oh, really?
Yes, it says, "Big toll feared in nuclear disaster." That's the headline there.
Yeah.
Little did we know that there would be echoes of that disaster still affecting us today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Ray. I'll take a little look at that afterwards. I suppose, you know, on reflection, because kind of that's what today really is all about. Like, it's, you know, 35 years on that, I suppose it's the catastrophic ramifications of what happened 35 years ago and how it continues to shadow into the lives of millions of people. And, you know, it's that impact which isn't just, we'll say, about the radioactivity, but it's also the impact socially, economically, ecologically, and medically, of course, as well, because all of those things are bound up together, if you like. And I suppose, Ray, it's very hard to tell, to keep telling a story that is that old, because in a way, for some people, it's like reading about history and saying, well, isn't that all over? That was then, and thank God this is now. But unfortunately, it's the long-term impact of that tragedy, I suppose, that has left a radioactive footprint even on humanity. And we can't undo that. And like, that's the thing, it's in the genetics. As a paediatrician said to me over there one day, she said, but you cannot undo our genetics. It is there. So in a sense, what we have to do is to adjust and adapt kind of around that. And that's kind of what we have been doing, you know, despite the pandemic, we've been managing to kind of keep it going.
We'll talk about the pandemic in a moment, but just, can you bring us back to when you first heard about it and how it affected you, you know, 35 years ago?
Sure, I can actually remember where I was, Ray. I was actually in a secondary school in Middleton, County Cork, and I was up on the stage, actually, and they'd had a general assembly of students, and we were talking about world issues. It was during the height of the Cold War, East and West, saber-rattling, nuclear weapons everywhere, Ireland as a neutral country trying to get disarmament. And my job was kind of trying to create the mind and the atmosphere of peace so that we would get East and West to negotiate down the weapons and work on peace. And I remember from the side of the stage, the principal of the school just walked on to the stage, stood by me at the microphone and said, "It has just been announced." And that's actually how I heard. Yeah. And really, Ray, what I did, kind of, I kind of felt that everything I had done as an environmentalist up to that point kind of was leading all to this, because I knew the theory. I knew what had happened in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. I knew the impact of all of that. And then the sidekick development from the weapons, of course, was the energy. So I knew what lethality was there. And I remember just saying, what are we going to do if the cloud comes over Ireland? Which, of course, it did in May 1986. And we put together a group of doctors and nurses, and I was the one just kind of doing the logistics, but we put together an information hotline because people were ringing in saying, my daughter is pregnant, you know, my child is going to school, are they allowed to go outdoors, are there foods we should take or not take? And we gave practical advice to people because nothing was actually coming from the state, would you believe? And lo and behold, about 2 weeks later, and we have it from all the satellite weather maps now, and you could actually see Ireland was surrounded by the radioactive cloud in May 86, and we had really dense rainfall at that time, and that brought the radioactivity down in some quantities in different parts of Ireland. And that's the absolute truth. I mean, it travelled the globe because radiation by its nature is transboundary, so it doesn't need
Did that affect anybody in Ireland, Eddie?
Well, of course, you know something, Ray? We'll never know that.
Right.
But we do know that, we'll say, there are a certain number of hill farmers, sheep farmers in various parts, like in Donegal and in different places, that actually were stopped from selling their meat because we discovered that their meat was contaminated. Okay. The same happened in Wales and in different parts of England in highland areas where sheep were grazing. And that actually went on for a number of years. And I'd actually forgotten it until I thought of it this morning. So, like, who knows, Ray? Because the thing with radioactivity is you just don't know. It's indiscriminate. And the whole planet got a dusting at that time. So, in a sense, what we're looking at now, 35 years on, what's the story telling us now, you know, with the 35 years of experience and the 35 years of reflection? And you know the way we've brought, like, the Chernobyl children for all of these years for
how many have you brought over?
We've brought the wonderful figure of 25,600 children.
Brilliant.
Have come to Ireland. And we, if I could just say the importance of those visits, because these are children who were sleeping, eating, breathing, and living in that ongoing radioactive environment, being topped up all the time by just living. And of course, the radioactivity was much more dangerous in the summertime when the soil gets dry and radioactivity could be airborne, and children would be swimming in rivers and streams and things. And of course, then, you know, it can happen there as well. So partly the value of coming to Ireland can never be truly measured.
How many people died as a result of Chernobyl?
Now, Ray, that is one of the greatest disputed figures of all time. And as they say, doctors differ and patients die.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like anything, that, like, you know, how many people died from smoking cigarettes, or how many people died from lead poisoning from, you know, petrol when they said lead or whatever. It's very, very hard to know. But I can tell you, in the groups that we would work with, the firefighters, for example, all the men that were heroes, known as liquidators, 800,000 of them were conscripted in to try and make the reactor safe, because it was about to go into a second, even bigger explosion in 1986. And about 45,000 of those men died in about the first 5 or 6 years. And people actually stopped counting after that. And so we'll actually never know, Ray. I mean, we know from thyroid cancer, for example, because that was one of the big cancers that was in epidemic proportions at the time, and lots of different cancers. And now it's more like damage to the immune system, to the heart, and, you know, like different things like that. But
Paul Cunningham did a great report on Morning Ireland this morning, and he's written a piece for RTE.ie, and one of those liquidators is interviewed by Paul, because he was there on the 20th anniversary. Oleg Chikov, he was a former helicopter pilot, and he spent 6 weeks flying over Chernobyl, dumping things out on it to try and dampen the effect.
And do you know something about that man? I think he was a colonel, and he had come back from the Afghanistan war, and a lot of them were pulled back from there because these were like their best fighters and their most brave and most courageous, and they needed their kind of lead-lined helicopters as well to try and keep the radioactivity down as much as possible when they were flying over the reactor. And because he was an older man, because he was like in his 40s, he actually flew more times than others because he wanted to save as many of the young helicopter pilots as possible, because he knew that they were of childbearing age.
Like, so he knew his fate. He knew his fate.
He knew. Yeah. He said that he knew. And it was that kind of self-sacrifice. And do you know something, Ray? I think a great homage was paid to those guys who self-sacrificed with the HBO series on Chernobyl. And that really, I think, kind of, you know, returned the spotlight on the real heroes of the day, because they had been, you know, thrown to the side, forgotten, passed by in history or in the story of Chernobyl. Yeah. And he gave them back the honour that they deserved, because they actually saved the world, because the reactor was convulsing. And unless they stabilised it by tunnelling in underneath in extreme conditions, between extreme heat, there was also extreme radioactivity. And I think programmes like that have helped, I suppose, to tell the story with fresh eyes and to tell the story anew. And all of the lies and the deception that came from the Soviet Union in 1986. We have chipped away at that, yeah. Ray, for 35 years.
And there's another documentary airing tonight. Where can people see that?
Oh, listen, I'm glad you mentioned that. It is an extraordinary documentary, actually. It's on PBS America, and I hope your listeners might have it. It's called Back to Chernobyl, and I saw it last week. It is stunning, because again, it, you know, it's all about the truth telling. Yeah. It's all about you know, the raw truth telling of real people's own personal stories. And I think that's actually, you know, like one of the greatest tributes, I suppose, we can, you know, pay to these people, is to listen to their stories, because they have been made like outcasts. They have been relegated to the realms of history. And yet their story is as real today as it was then and will be in the future, because it's their children and their grandchildren who are today's victims of Chernobyl. Because we're looking at, you know, the third generation, what they call Chernobyl lineage, where it has leaned across the generations.
And like that, through the gene pool,
exactly. Coming back to, you know, our friend, the pediatrician over there, yes, that said to me, she says, "Adi, you cannot undo the genetics."
Right.
And of course, you know, I probably asked her, you know, an innocent question, like saying, you know, when will this be over?
Yeah.
Like, is there a beginning, middle and end? You know, and I often raise...
Well, they don't know is the answer, I suppose.
We don't know, absolutely not. Because
it was like what we're going through now. It was unprecedented.
Unprecedented. Yeah. And the latency period sometimes for the cancers or the diseases to emerge can be up to 60 plus years. Yeah. So we will never know, you know, because it is dependent on so many different things. And because, I suppose, there are still 5 million people living in these contaminated zones, of which, by the way, 1 million of them are just children, we have to look at the ramifications of that, because children, or pregnant women actually, are the most susceptible and vulnerable to exposure to radioactivity. Mm. And that is mainly now in 2021 through the food chain. And it's also through, you know, we're talking about the forest fires in Killarney, which are raging and, yes, and really damaging. But can you imagine if you throw the element of radioactivity into those fires, besides the dust of, you know, and
yes,
the burning?
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
And in watching, yeah, the brilliant HBO thing which Sky, yeah, showed, and we spoke about this before, you were a consultant on it.
Yes.
And it won all sorts of awards, BAFTAs and Emmys.
Yes.
In watching that, you know, the disinformation and the cover-up and all that sort of thing was well dramatised in it. But how did that affect you when you started to work with Chernobyl Children International?
Yeah. Do you know something, Ray? It was very difficult, except the thing is, I suppose we had a good dollop of fair innocence and,
right,
you know, we actually...
Naivety.
Didn't know
naivety, yeah.
Naivety, absolutely. Because, you see, the KGB were everywhere and, like, it, you know, it was still the Soviet Union and everything was controlled, of course, including information. And, in fact, in the early months after the accident, the first thing that they did in Moscow was to pass secret legislation, 40 pieces of legislation, to keep the truth not only from the people, the millions of people there, but also from the rest of the world. Mm. And it's really only thanks to the Swedes, who picked it up on their sensitive monitoring equipment, that the world actually found out that there had been this massive release, which was thrown 7 kilometres into the Earth's atmosphere and carried with the winds to every corner of the earth as we know it. I mean, that was shocking. So it was very hard to work in those circumstances.
Yes.
And really, it was the bravery of Ukrainian and Belarusian doctors in 1990 who broke the silence. They sent into our office a two-liner email which said, "SOS appeal, for God's sake, help us to get the children out."
Yes.
And we were saying, oh my God, like, is it really still bad over there? And that's actually how we heard that they had been silenced by the state, so that they couldn't talk about the birth defects, they couldn't talk about what was happening, you know, health-wise, and the people that were dying, and they would be put in prison and lose their jobs if they spoke out about the real consequences of the disaster. So in a way, Ray, I would say that on the 26th of April 1986, a new word entered the history of language. it entered into the history of world disasters and entered into the history of the world. And that word was Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And that is ingrained on our minds. And it is only thanks to the generosity and the compassion of our small island, but by God do we have a big heart, that we have changed the lives of countless
and
people.
Saved so many lives. And just say a little bit about the cardiac surgery, the heart surgery that was needed for people.
Well, Ray, one of the first things to show the impact of radioactivity on small newborns was actually on that beautiful organ, the heart. And Ukrainian doctors first discovered it, and they actually called it Chernobyl heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what we refer to it as now. Thousands of children being born with this condition. And of course, there's no way that you can live with this condition. You would die with this condition without intervention. And of course, thousands of them did die. And out of that story from the surgeons, we actually created a cardiac program where surgeons sponsored by the people of Ireland who are from all over the world fly into the stricken region of Ukraine and perform life-saving surgeries. And they literally perform miracles every time they do a surgery. It's like a miracle for the families and, of course, for the child.
Yeah.
And
it's life-saving.
You know,
it's life-saving surgery.
It's actually life-saving. Yeah, yeah. Now, unfortunately, Ray, we'd actually planned a cardiac surgeon to mark the 35th anniversary, and the surgeons and the cardiac nurses were all flying in, we'll say, last week. But because of the levels of COVID in Ukraine and they escalated so high, we actually had to cancel it. So, you know, we're very much, as we'd say in Irish, Éireann Imill with this. But while the world has kind of pressed pause because of the pandemic, we have still managed, despite everything we're going through, we've managed to keep all of the programs running.
Great.
And that is the most important
thing.
And
what about you? Because you'd be regularly over there. And when was the last time you were in or around Chernobyl?
Well, we were there in February, 12 months. I mean, unfortunately, none of us have been back since. Little did we know then, Ray, you know, we all thought after the first lockdown that things might be returning to normal. And here we are another 12 months later.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a glass half full rather than a half empty optimist. And sometimes, you know, we have to dig deep for the optimism, and we have to dig deep as well for the hope, because our organisation is built on hope.
Yeah.
And it is built on love, and it is built on the bedrock of our volunteers all around the country. Thousands of people over 35 years have opened their homes, opened their hearts, taken in these children. They have done fundraisers for us. They've sent convoys of aid. We've sent flights of aid. We've sent teams of nurses and doctors and painters and tilers and electricians. And they have all done stunning work.
Yeah.
And in a sense today, Ray, you know, I know while we're commemorating the sadness and the catastrophe itself, but there's also a little bit of uplift in here, because we decided, you know, today we won't talk about all of the sadness and all of the darkness, because what we're trying to do is to kindle the light and to say to the people there that they are not alone, that we are there to share the burden, even despite what we're going through ourselves. And the people of Ireland, Ray, have never been found wanting, have never wavered in their commitment. And, you know, and the message to the people, loud and clear, from our president down, is we will not forget you.
And the president started a global commemoration yesterday. With candles been lit all over the world to commemorate Chernobyl 35 years ago.
Which is extraordinary. And actually, I believe, I haven't seen it myself now because I'm not great on social media and Twitter and all that, but I believe the ORIS have just put up a little 23-minute piece of the candle lighting ceremony.
Right.
And I think that's an extraordinary symbol, particularly coming from President Higgins, you know, who's our head of state, because that sends out, you know, a global chain reaction of other voices joining together, which started with the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, Helen Clark, who's very well known environmentalist and humanitarian, and then went on to Melbourne, of course, where we had Sonia O'Sullivan lighting the candle first, and it went right and left, north, south, east and west. and all brought together by our president. And I think it's an extraordinary thing that a small island nation, struggling, having many challenges, you know, the aftermath of the pandemic and everything that we have yet to face. But somehow, Ray, we still have the capacity to reach beyond ourselves, to reach beyond our own troubles, and to throw out this lifeline, this message of solidarity, this message of hope for the future, and really saying the people of Ireland will never be found wanting.
And never forget Chernobyl. I think that's the important thing.
I think that's a powerful message.
They need to feel that they're being remembered.
Exactly, because, you know, a lot of things that we hear, and this will come up in the documentary tonight, Ray, that you mentioned, that's going to be on PBS America, is how the people who survived, and then, you know, they became forgotten. They were forgotten, and they became like outcasts.
Yeah.
That nobody. It was like the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Hubakusha.
We must find out where people can watch that, because I don't know if people have access to PBS. It might be shown on somewhere else in the near future, and we'll tell people about that. Ady Roach, founder and CEO of Chernobyl Children International. Thanks so much for talking to us. Thanks,
Thank
Ady.
You, Ray.
But
Thank
mind
you.
Yourself. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.